On the 250th anniversary of the birth of Ludwig van Beethoven, I, Patricia Salomone, present Beethoven, His Life and Times, with the assistance of my friend Gerald Fennec for the musical content. In this, the ninth episode of Beethoven, His Life and Times, I wish to look into the relationship between the two colossi of German culture early in the 19th century, Johann Wolfgang Goethe and Ludwig van Beethoven, who were to meet in the spa town of Teplitz near Prague in 1812. As we have seen, Beethoven in his adult life suffered from ill health. He was restless, moving house in Vienna no less than 30 times in search of more amenable surroundings. If we add to these his frequent moves to the countryside to get away from the hassle and bustle of Vienna, he moved house about 60 times in his life. One of his favorite spots was the spa town of Teplitz, which he visited on the advice of one of his many doctors. Teplitz was a favorite with royalty, nobility, and the elite. It offered hot springs, sylvan surroundings, a pleasant lake, and the chance to meet not only the right people, but also the right ladies. Beethoven reached Teplitz in July 1812, when society in the town was agog with the news of Napoleon's advance into Russia. But Beethoven was in low spirits. He was ill, suffering from recurring colic and diarrhea. He was anxious about his finances. The Austrian Empire, having been crippled by war, caused many of Vienna's rich aristocrats to become bankrupt overnight. Of the three benefactors who had agreed to provide him with an annuity so long as he did not leave Vienna, the Archduke Rudolf, Prince Lobkowitz, and Prince Kinsky, Lobkowitz, having had his estates seized, could no longer support him, while shortly after Kinsky was to die falling off his horse. To make things worse, Beethoven was heartbroken. He had been let down by yet another of his loves, another young woman who he had hoped to marry. This time, it was Teresa Malfatti, the elder daughter of a rich Italian silk trader who owned a grand mansion off the Kärntnerstrasse, as well as a country estate. This time, aware of the fact that he had a steady income and feeling safe in the close friendship of Archduke Rudolf, who was the emperor's younger brother, Beethoven believed he stood a good chance of making the right impression on the Malfatti family. In order to be accepted, he sent for clothes, shirts, and neckcloths. On this occasion, he even wrote to his friend Wengler in Bonn to look up and provide his birth certificate. So certain was he that it would be needed for marriage. What he had not taken into consideration was the fact that young Teresa was only 18 years old, while he was turning 40. She had several other suitors, and flirty as she was, she may have played him against the others. A friend and assistant of Beethoven's, Ignaz Glickenstein, was engaged to Teresa's younger sister, Nancy. And it was to him that Beethoven wrote several times, asking whether he thought that a proposal would meet a favorable response. But this time, it was Beethoven's own unruly behavior that ruined his chances. It seems that on one occasion, while he was alone with Teresa at the Malfatti home, under the effect of drink, he made a rough lunge at her. Teresa was shocked, and the family entrusted poor Glickenstein to inform Beethoven that they expected him never to approach the young woman again. Yet, for Teresa, Beethoven had written one of his most loved piano pieces, the well-known Fourelise. He had deliberately composed an easy piece so that she, as his pupil, could play it without any difficulty. To this very day, Fourelise is a favorite with people who, though having little talent, wish to play a piece by Beethoven. I must admit that I belong to this crowd, and remember rather clumsily playing Fourelise on our piano in my early teens in Quisisana. go back to the poet, playwright, and novelist Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, who our Beethoven idealized. Beethoven had been introduced to Goethe's works during his early years in Bonn, most probably by the von Breuning family. He had been so fascinated by the work of the author, who was about 21 years his senior, that he wrote many a charming song to his poetry, capturing the drama of yearning and the joy of melancholy in the poems of Goethe.
Although Goethe is not a philosopher in the traditional sense of the word, he was greatly influenced by Immanuel Kant, the most influential living philosopher during Goethe's youth. However, Goethe criticized Kant's ideas in the Critic of Pure Reason. While Kant's work adopted a theoretical and critical standpoint, as it explored the transcendental conditions for the possibility of experience, Goethe felt that Kant's views, no matter how convincing they were from a theoretical point of view, did not have the power to transform ethical character. Although Goethe indicated that he considered Kant to be the most eminent modern philosopher of his time, he felt that Kant took a rather roundabout route in his ethical and metaphysical thought, rather than considering the possibility of this being something which humans are, by nature, well equipped to undertake. Goethe further claimed that knowing is not enough, we must apply. Willing is not enough, we must do. This clearly demonstrates a shift away from theoretical armchair philosophy to a more active stance, possibly reflecting the views of Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who strongly influenced Enlightenment thought. Rousseau elevated human emotions and subjectivity through his longing for a return to nature. For Rousseau, humans in the state of nature were innocent, and it was civilization and all the unnatural aspects linked to it that corrupted them. Although Goethe felt some form of unity with nature in his Sturm und Drang period, his ideas appear to have later changed to incorporate a more balanced view of life, where passion should be balanced with duty, creativity with regulation. This balancing act appears to be precisely what Beethoven is successful in presenting us with through his music and his life, which incorporate both emotions and duty.
In 1810, In Vienna, the Burg Theatre commissioned Beethoven to compose some music to Goethe's play Egmont. Beethoven was more than pleased to take on this commission because he so admired the author, but also because the subject matter appealed to his sense of justice and of freedom from oppression, as it tells the story of Count Egmont, the Flemish hero who rebelled against Spanish oppression. So pleased was Beethoven with the piece that he asked his publisher to send a copy of the score to Goethe. In the summer of 1812, the two met in Teplitz. The two giants of German culture could not have been more different in appearance and upbringing. Goethe, who was the elder of the two, had been tutored privately from an early age, mastering Greek, Latin, French, Italian, English, and also Hebrew. He graduated in law and was well-travelled and was always elegantly dressed, mixing easily with royalty. In Weimar, Goethe formed part of the Privy Council. Beethoven, 20 years younger, as we know, had had scanty education, odd and rough manners, and a scruffy appearance. But his music was his forte, and he was well aware of his worth. Initially reciprocal admiration between the two, but Beethoven's temperamental and tempestuous character was easily detected by the older man, who wrote to his friend Carl Zelter. Beethoven's talent amazed me. However, unfortunately, he is an utterly untamed personality, who is not altogether in the wrong if he finds the world detestable, but he thereby does not make it more enjoyable either for himself or others. He is very much to be excused, on the other hand, and very much to be pitied, as his hearing is leaving him, which, perhaps, injures the musical part of his nature less than his social. He, by nature laconic, becomes doubly so because of this lack. Gertrude strolled together in Teplitz, they happened to come across the imperial party. Goethe is said to have moved aside and bowed in deference, while Beethoven, his old liberal attitude taking the upper hand of his manners, just strode on in contempt of his companion's act of obsequiousness, later expressing his conviction that it's a man's intellect, not his birth, that make his glory. Beethoven was to write to his publisher. Goethe delights far too much in the atmosphere of the court, far more than is seemly for a poet. Was it not Beethoven, after all, who years earlier, offended by the presence of French officers in his benefactor's presence, Prince Linkowski's drawing room, had written, "Prince, what you are by accident of birth. What I am through myself. There have been and will always be thousands of princes, but there is only one Beethoven." So, what could have been a fine friendship between the two giants of German culture ended in a cool separation as each went back to his own home, one in Weimar and the other one in Vienna. Forever, though, they will be joined in artistic union by the magic notes of the overture of Egmont, which we are pleased to send on air at the end of this episode. Prague. On his way to Treplitz, Beethoven was to live through the most passionate of his love affairs and write his ominous letter to the immortal beloved. Who this lady was, we shall try to find out in the next episode of Beethoven, His Life and Times. I wish to thank Dr. Sandra Dingley for her interesting intervention during this week's program. And I trust that you will all look forward to next week's program on Tuesday at 8 p.m. with a repeat on Wednesday at 10 a.m. I would like to thank Professor Sandra Dingley for her notes on Goethe.